Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today, joining us for the fourth year in a row, Leslie Appleton Young. Leslie is the Vice President and Chief Economist of the California Association of Realtors. Leslie's been with the CAR organization since 1984, a statewide trade organization with nearly 200,000 members. Leslie directs the activities of the Association Member Information Group. She oversees the analysis of housing markets and brokerage industries, and she speaks constantly in front of groups. Leslie, we welcome you back.
Bruce, wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
I began talking to you in 2006, and I'd have to say you probably had a tough job from 06 through 08. Has it felt a little lighter this year?
Absolutely. I mean, as we work our way through this, it's certainly gotten better, and I think two things have really changed. One is there's definitely a light at the end of the tunnel, but the other thing is just people's expectations of the market have gotten back to what I would consider to be a realistic mode, and that certainly helps a lot as well.
People are not being afraid of the downside nearly as much. Is that
absolutely
what you're saying?
Absolutely, because I think we've seen the worst of it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Now, do you feel that that's true in all price bands?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I think as we go forward for the next 18 to 24 months, it's really the upper end of the market where you're going to see more price adjustment in the downward direction. And at the kind of moderate and low distressed market, the unwillingness of lenders to release what has been termed the shadow inventory, I think is going to keep those prices at least flat, if not continuing to edge up a little bit as we go forward. But the upper end of the market has seen some adjustment, but nothing like the rest of the market. And as the kind of economic turmoil hits upper end borrowers, I think they will, if they have to sell, they're going to have to get more realistic about what it takes on the price side to get things closed.
We're noticing in Riverside that there are some fabulous homes that, let's say, you might have loans that are $1.5 million, and the trustee sale bids are opening up at $700,000 and then not getting bid on.
Exactly.
And so you're going to have cascading of that inventory into the market somehow that's at a,
right,
very, at a very different price than the neighbor probably owes. And that's probably coming. But on the good note is the lower priced inventory, which was probably the subprime loan going bad, that has been absorbed and probably is coming back, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, certainly the stimulus thrown at the first time buyer through the tax credits and the kind of pushing down rates that is starting to lift, obviously, with the end of the purchases by the Fed of mortgage-backed securities. But all of that provided a tremendous incentive for first-time buyers and investors, and saw that market really, really firm up. And I think it will continue to be, I know a lot of, practitioners in the business who have files of buyers who are ready to go, and yet, it's their seventh, eighth property they're bidding on, and they still aren't getting it. So that is very active, and it's interesting as you go around the state of California. I would venture to say that every area describes themselves as unique and different, and I have an appreciation for that. I think every area is unique and different, but the dichotomy in the housing market today has more to do with price than it does with location.
And does that have to do with someone's ability to actually really qualify for something, whereas before we could maybe pretend we did?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think it's also just the demand exceeds the supply at the low end,
right?
And supply is well in excess of demand at the high end. The financing is a whole other issue that really overlays the entire market with qualifying criteria that look like they did 25 years ago, which I don't think is a bad thing.
You know, in the past, when you looked at inventory levels, I really felt that they were pretty accurate kind of leading statistic. When you got below a certain months of inventory, you could kind of go, okay, we're going to head up now. This time it feels, I'm more skeptical of that category, and I'll tell you why. I think there's a lot of lenders that own properties that haven't come on the market. And an even bigger problem is I think the default rates have exploded, and yet the lenders haven't even begun filing an NOD.
Right.
And one other category is you have a lot of people that are upside down that would list their property, but they're not. So there's a concept, you know, there's a pent-up group of buyers. I have a feeling there might be a pent-up group of sellers.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right, but it's really kind of the scope and nature of future government intervention
that's going to
determine how that stuff gets rectified. I don't think it's anything that we can attribute to market forces.
And that makes predicting things just a bit challenging, since you can't look into the crystal ball of government decisions, or, you know, maybe we can. It would certainly seem like the direction of their decision process has been to prevent what happened in 08. They found out what happens in 08 when you just throw a lot of inventory that's not fixed into the marketplace.
Right.
And it just damaged the price. How about the country as a whole? The GDP is going up, even though it's mostly government stimulus. Is California also, has that benefited by the stimulus programs?
Yeah, and actually we're starting to see more green shoots in California. A number of firms in Silicon Valley, and I guess we should mention Steve Jobs and the iPad, that I must say I have a few friends that are iPad evangelists.
Okay.
I think that's and even the state budget deficit, while large and looming, looks better than it did a couple of months ago, because receipts are up. So, you know, California is always, you know, the outlier. So we're hit harder. We boomed harder. We fell, you know, more. We're, you know, maybe seeing improvement faster in terms of the opportunities for people to get into the market now that the getting's good. I think I read in one of your pieces that California is for sale, and that's a good way of seeing that. But in general, I would characterize our recovery a little bit as a flat line recovery. You look at the data, and the 5.6% GDP growth in the fourth quarter. I mean, 4% of that was, you know, inventory restocking, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think another issue that I wonder about is how much of our retail sales growth is tied to all of those households who are behind on their mortgage payments.
Exactly.
And that's kind of interesting to look at. So we are not out of the woods yet, you know, in any way, shape, or form, but we are on the mend, and markets do clear. And I think you mentioned earlier the government stimulus is starting to go away, and I think that's why there's a certain amount of reasonable uncertainty about the second half of this year, when you are likely to see rates continue to head up a little bit, and not have, you know, any of these, you know, federal tax credits to lean on.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because interest rates, there's a feeling that when the Federal Reserve backed off purchasing the mortgage-backed securities, there might be a pretty significant change in rates. And has that happened?
Well, they have gone up a little bit. And I at some point over the last 6 weeks, I was told or read that kind of consensus increase was maybe a quarter point. And I think that's about what's happened. So it hasn't been significant, like a percentage point.
No.
But rates certainly, and that was, of course, built into the market before at the end of March.
Is there a feeling that if interest rates somehow climbed above 6, there would be a reaction that would be negative?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what's interesting about that, and I, you know, that's what I love talking about you, is because you have definitely a history of a lot of the statistics, is, and I could be wrong in this, but I think, you know how when you go shopping for a new home in, let's say, 2003, 4, and 5, and you go, well, I think I'll wait, and then you go to the next phase, and it's $25,000 more, and you kick yourself?
Right.
I wonder if that doesn't happen psychologically to the person that sees the interest rate at 5.25 and thinks that's high, and then sees 6. And I wonder if the pressure doesn't go, you know what, maybe getting in would be wiser than thinking it's going to go low again.
No, and that's a really good point. And typically when rates turn, it incites more market activity because people do, you know, it's like they're low, they're great, this is the environment, and all of a sudden it changes, and it's like, boy, I better get in now before it's too late. So typically when you reach, you know, a turning point and rates start to go back up, initially more people get off the fence and get in the market, but at some point it impacts their affordability. I think one of the things about today's market that's important for people to keep in mind is, you know, it's not clear that prices have bottomed in all categories. But it's pretty clear that rates are going to be higher a year from now than they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
So doing that kind of a back-of-the-envelope calculation to see what the trade-off's going to be between higher financing costs versus not waiting for prices to go down, you know, that's something that people should just think about.
Well, I think people too really need to realize it and get a little bit historical perspective. When I became an investor in real estate, I refinanced my home in 1981 at 17.5.
Yep.
And then I was delighted a year later to refi it at 12.5. And very smart people were telling me you'll never see below 10. And now somebody that would be forced to pay 6 would feel pretty gypped. And just historically, you got to be kidding. It's still a tremendous rate.
Yeah, well, again, you know, prices were also a lot lower in 1981.
Of course.
So, yeah, I mean, it was, and I think the other thing that's really different this time around is just the role that equity or lack thereof has played in the cycle.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I've been saying the last year or two is, you know, one of the things that we've learned is that if you don't have equity in your home, you're not a home owner. I think that's really important to keep in mind, and I really use it as a tagline for, you know, behavioral changes. And as much as I am, you know, dismayed by the behavior on Wall Street, the reality was the rating agencies were using models that were based on consumer behavior toward mortgage debt that changed dramatically during the boom. You know, and when you have to pony up 20% and you've got equity in your home, you treat it very differently than if you're kind of a no doc, zero down. I mean, we do an annual survey of realtors asking them about their last closed transaction. And in 2006, 40% of the realtors that were working with a first time home buyer said that home buyer did not put any money down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're just being set up for an inability to weather any kind of fluctuation, which we know happens.
You know what's interesting about that, and I'm not going to play devil's advocate, but I'm going to say, you know, I think the timing of that no down financing was atrocious because you were at a price level that was absurd in relationship to income. If you had a no-down program today, which I actually think we should, because here's my opinion.
Yeah.
I think we have to create households that can own.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also just left, and you're still in the process of taking back hundreds of thousands of homes from people who want to be owners but now will be credit damaged and won't be able to become new ones. What if we said, okay, let's forget the $8,000 or the $6,500 or the $10,000, which in essence in many markets make it a nothing down deal, only at the cost of the taxpayer. Why don't we say, let's make a no down program, and we know there's going to be breakage. When somebody doesn't make their payment, here's the two solutions to me that would be very creative. Let's let the loan go forward to the next owner without qualifying, like a simple FHA assumption used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The only criteria is they have to make the payments current, or if it goes to trustee sale, and I talked to Sean O'Toole about this with Foreclosure Radar, is let the opening bid for just the next 5 years and this loan product that we create, let the opening bid just be the late payments. There'd never be an REO that came from there.
Yeah, that's true.
And so the Nothing Down program would create tons of interest in new owners, and you might retain the percentage of home ownership that we have, because I'm really afraid that what's going to happen is you're going to have a national decline probably into the 62 or 3% range and create a ton of vacant homes. And I imagine California probably would be the same type of downturn in home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how we're going to solve it if we keep thinking, okay, we have to have that big down payment, but those buyers, you know, I love your statistics, and you really, anybody looking at your presentations should really appreciate all of the information there. And one of the things that stands out to me is the net dollars that is coming to the seller now and how different that is from what used to be.
Right.
So
right.
Before they were coming out with a couple hundred grand, and now it's about what?
Well, it's 50, but
50.
About a third of them sold at a loss.
And so the people that sold at a loss, I think, first of all, you might not have a down payment, but psychologically you might be going, you know what, real estate's not so hot.
Right.
So does that really affect them joining again at some point? You know, does it say, maybe we won't be a homeowner this time? There's another chart you had that showed the percentage of people that are leaving the homeownership
that are not planning to repurchase.
Yeah,
right.
I would have bet $1 million against that chart. I mean, it's under what?
It's something a little bit shy of 40%, and about 3 or 4 years ago, it was 70%. And again, it's just highly correlated with the lack of equity.
Absolutely. But I never would have thought it was 70%. I would have thought somebody that sold a house bought a house 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. Never in my wildest imagination did I think that 30% of them decided, okay, I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really true? Even at the peak of the market, there were more than 25% that said
that's
it?
Well, you know, again, the data is what it is. It's a survey of realtors. We're asking about their last closed transaction. And
That's
you know,
fair.
It is what it is. I mean, I think that, you know, before any like public policy is hung on it, you know, it should be resurveyed probably a variety of ways to just see, you know,
but the
see
trend,
where it is. But I put more credence in just the discontinuity between a couple years ago and today, you know, in terms of the percentage of people that are planning to repurchase.
Absolutely. In other words, there's no doubt that less people are deciding
exactly.
to do it.
Exactly.
And that's more important. Okay. Affordability. I mean, have we ever seen this high affordability before?
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I kind of meant by that statement, California's on sale.
Yeah.
And it's the payment. And there's no doubt about it. The price damage and the interest rate that we currently enjoy creates a payment that in Riverside County is very often far less than rent.
Absolutely.
And yet we're still feeling like it's necessary to induce buyers. And so that kind of shows the mental journey of a buyer that they're, you know, they're not excited about what they really should be excited about.
Well, you know, I think in California, because prices came down so sharply, I'm not sure the tax credit, you know, when we surveyed, you know, first-time buyers last year, and the overwhelming majority said that the tax credit had a huge impact on their decision. But I wouldn't be surprised that if a certainly significant proportion would have either bought now or would have stayed on the sidelines and are seriously looking at it, just because it's so attractive, you know. And you look at, you know, kind of the FHA program, 75% of first-time buyers in California, it's not a first-time buyer program, but 75% of the new buyers, first-time buyers, are utilizing the FHA program. So it's that is just wrapped up with a present, wrapped up with a ribbon.
Mm-hmm. Plus, first-time buyers are now about half of the volume?
They're high 40s, 47%.
Okay. Now, the volume of sales, I mean, it's pretty healthy. We're in the 500 and change pace, right?
Exactly. And exactly. For 19 consecutive months, we've been, a year and a half, we've been at a pace over 500,000.
And I looked at the charts that you have, and a lot of them have historic data. We never even past 500,000 until 1999.
Right.
So
right.
This is significant volume. But what's interesting is the accumulative dollars are very different than we were in the peak. So if you're selling this block of, 525,000 homes and you add up the total commissions earned by realtors, it's a very different number than 06, 07.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the number of transactions bottomed 3 years ago. The dollar volume is at a trough last year and this year.
Yeah, and so the,
and it's off over 50%.
Yeah, so incomes have really, really been affected by the people in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Has that changed the membership? It would have to.
Yeah, what's interesting is it hasn't changed it as much as we thought it would. In 2007, there were about 211,000 California realtors. So these are not licensees, but you have a license and you become a member of the your local association. And so we had 211,000. And this year, it looks like we're going to come in around 172,000. So that's a little bit shy of a 30,000 member drop, which is significant. But given what we've just talked about in terms of a, 50%+ drop in dollar volume, it's held up surprisingly well. And again, I think the explanation, you don't have to go too far to find it. There's not a lot of job opportunities in the rest of the economy. And real estate is a profession where, get your license, get with a firm, and, you can always have a pool of relatives to start with.
Yeah.
And you can, if you work hard enough, I think a lot of people don't realize what hard work it is, but if you work hard enough, you can be successful.
That's right. And this kind of market really lends itself to the first-time agent because it's the first-time buyer with no connections. And so,
right. Good. That's a really, really good point.
Yeah. The people that are buying half the homes don't have a clue of what they're doing, and they don't have contacts, so they're very likely to hook up with somebody. And is a website presence real important right now?
Oh, it's critical. It's critical. I mean, we survey. I just saw the results of our buyer survey for 2010, and one of the questions is, did you look at the newspaper?
In your
home search, and the answer was, I think, less than 10% of them said we looked at print.
Yeah, and you look at that, and you think 10 years ago that had to be 70. Probably.
Yeah.
It was very different anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now people are definitely looking at homes in a very different model.
Yeah.
And that's actually pretty inexpensive for an agent, I would think, compared to running big ads. You can drive people.
And it's social networking and all of that stuff that, some of the old timers embrace, and, anything new, they're off and running. But for some of us, and I'm someone that still doesn't have a Facebook page, so I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but my children basically said if I got one, they wouldn't speak to me again. So that kind of was it for me. But yeah, there's all kinds of ways to set up shop. And, a lot of the brokerages have had to, all of them have had to cut back on overhead and expenses. So, a realtor may not necessarily have an office that they go to. They have a conference room that they go to, but they've got wireless, they've got everything they need on their iPad or on their notebook, and they're doing business by being visible out in the field. They're not, sitting at a brick-and-mortar office like many of the rest of us.
We're down to our last minute. One of the things that the internet has done is allow the consumer to kind of shop around without spending the realtor's time. And when the contact is actually made, it might even be for a purchase or close to one because they've honed in on the inventory and everything on their own.
Well, that's true, although it's very interesting. One of the questions that I always ask in these surveys is, how did you find out about the home you actually purchased?
Okay.
And it's, well over 80, maybe close to 90% of them say my agent showed me that home.
Okay.
So it's almost, again, a question of way too much information on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in a market where properties are selling very quickly, you need to have an agent there representing you who knows, this is coming on the market in the morning. We're going to be first in line.
That's a great way to end our first show together. Leslie Appleton-Young, thank you so much for joining us. And the website for CAR is www.car.org.
Thanks so much, Bruce.
You bet.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.